Laws affecting real estate. The authority that local government has to pass and enforce building and zoning codes has a profound impact on the type of and location of development within a municipality. The authority granted to counties, municipalities, school districts, and special taxing districts impacts real estate development and property values. Real estate licensing laws. The purpose of state licensing laws and regulations is to protect the public against unscrupulous real estate practitioners. In all states, it is unlawful for anyone to engage in the business of real estate brokerage without first obtaining a real estate license. All states require mandatory training and the passage of an exam for licensure, and each state has distinct requirements for obtaining a real estate license. Some states publish contract forms and addenda that are required in certain types of transactions when handled by a license holder. In other states, an attorney may be necessary for every real estate transaction. A license to practice real estate is valid only in the state in which it was issued. If a license holder wishes to practice in another state, he or she must obtain a license from that state. Some states have reciprocity, meaning they will issue a license to the holder of a license in a reciprocal state with just an application and the payment of a fee. Certain states, like Texas, do not reciprocate with other states at all. Federal Fair Housing Laws. The first federal fair housing law was the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which granted people of all races and color the right to inherit, purchase, lease, sell, hold, and convey real and personal property. It is a very broad law and is still in effect today. In 1968, in the case of Jones v. Alfred H. Mayer Company, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the 1866 law prohibits discrimination on the basis of race or color, without exception. While there are some exceptions to the application of subsequent fair housing laws, 1968 law, the Act of 1866 provides for no exceptions whatsoever. Lawsuits under this act are filed directly in federal court. The next major legislation affecting housing is the Federal Fair Housing Law, officially called Title VIII of the Civil Rights Act of 1968. It prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, and national origin. Gender was added as a protected class in 1974, followed by physical handicap and familial status in 1988. In January 2021, President Biden signed an executive order preventing and combating discrimination on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation. HUD will enforce the Fair Housing Act to prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. For more information, visit www.hud.gov/programs/fair-housing-unequal-apat/housing-discrimination-and-persons-identifying-LGBTQ. Discrimination is prohibited in the sale or rental of housing and vacant land offered for residential construction or use. Age is not a protected category under this law. The Civil Rights Act of 1968 had a significant impact on the real estate community. While there are some exceptions to this law, real estate license holders must always comply. Steering, also known as channeling, is taking buyers or renters to, or away from, a particular area based on the race, religion, etc., of the buyer or renter, and is the most common cause for complaint under the law. Steering can be blatant or quite subtle. Directing buyers or renters to a particular neighborhood or a particular building within an apartment complex based upon a protected class would be an example of steering. Grouping families with children in one building in an apartment complex would also constitute steering and could subject the landlord and property manager to liability under fair housing laws. Blockbusting is any attempt to induce panic selling in a neighborhood for financial gain. The most common tactic is to imply the entrance into the neighborhood of a new ethnic or racial group and suggest to homeowners that they sell now while values are still high. The perpetrators of blockbusting often bought properties at below market prices from concerned sellers, only to sell them later at above-market prices to minority buyers. Blockbusting is also known as panic peddling. The Fair Housing Act covers the sale and rental of most housing. In some circumstances, the 1968 Act exempts owner-occupied buildings with no more than 4 units, single-family housing sold or rented without the use of a broker, and housing operated by organizations and private clubs that limit occupancy to members. No one may take any of the following actions based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or handicap in the sale or rental of housing: refuse to rent or sell housing, refuse to negotiate for housing, make housing unavailable, deny availability of a dwelling, set different terms, conditions, or privileges for sale or rental of a dwelling, provide different housing services or facilities, falsely deny that housing is available for inspection, sale, or rental, for profit, persuade owners to sell or rent, blockbusting, deny anyone access to or membership in a facility or service, such as a multiple listing service, related to the sale or rental of housing. In mortgage lending, no one may take any of the following actions based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or handicap, disability, refuse to make a mortgage loan, refuse to provide information regarding loans, impose different terms or conditions on a loan, such as different interest rates, points, or fees, discriminate in appraising property, refuse to purchase a loan, or set different terms or conditions for purchasing a loan. It is illegal for anyone to threaten, coerce, intimidate, or interfere with anyone exercising a fair housing right or assisting others who exercise that right. Advertising. Advertising that indicates a limitation or preference based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or handicap is prohibited. This prohibition against discriminatory advertising applies to single-family and owner-occupied housing that is otherwise exempt from the Fair Housing Act. Brokers should be careful about loosely worded ads that would indicate a preference based upon a protected class. Likewise, graphics used in advertising should reflect the diversity of the local population. Good practice in advertising is to ensure that the advertisement describes the property as opposed to describing the occupant or owner. License holders should pay special attention to the following problem areas in advertising: use of racial and ethnic terms, religious preference, gender preference, handicapped persons, familial status, protection for those with disabilities. A person is considered disabled if he or she has a condition that substantially limits at least one major life activity, has a record of such a disability, or is regarded as having such a disability. Buyers and renters are considered disabled if they have a physical or mental disability, including hearing, mobility and visual impairments, chronic alcoholism, chronic mental illness, AIDS and AIDS-related complex, mental disability. A landlord may not refuse to allow a tenant to make reasonable modifications to a dwelling or common use areas at the expense of the tenant, if necessary, for the disabled person to use the housing. Where reasonable, the landlord may permit changes only if the tenant agrees to restore the property to its original condition upon moving out. Advertising can describe the expected behavior of a tenant, and advertising using the terms non-smoking and sober tenants does not violate the Act. Reasonable accommodation. A landlord must make reasonable accommodation in rules, policies, practices, or services, if necessary, for the disabled person to use the housing. A building with a no pets policy must allow a visually impaired tenant to keep a guide dog. An apartment complex that offers tenants ample, unassigned parking must honor a request from a mobility-impaired tenant for a reserved space near her apartment, if necessary, to ensure that she can access her apartment. Housing need not be made available to a person who is a direct threat to the health or safety of others, or who currently uses illegal drugs. Individuals who feel discriminated against may file a complaint with the Texas Workforce Commission Civil Rights Division, HUD, the courts, or the U.S. Attorney General. The complaint must be filed within 2 years of the alleged act. The burden of proof of discrimination lies with the person filing the complaint. Placing the equal housing sign in the office window, signing the Voluntary Affirmative Marketing Agreement, VAMA, having and adhering to standard office procedures for working with customers, and holding regular meetings on fair housing practices are required to demonstrate compliance. Penalties. Remedies include actual damages and punitive damages. Because a violation of the law is considered a civil offense, there are no criminal penalties for violations of fair housing laws. Requirements for new buildings. In buildings that are ready for first occupancy after March 13, 1991, and have an elevator and four or more units, public and common areas must be accessible to persons with disabilities. Doors and hallways must be wide enough for wheelchairs. All units must have an accessible route into and through the unit, accessible light switches, electrical outlets, thermostats, and other environmental controls. Reinforced bathroom walls to allow later installation of grab bars. Kitchens and bathrooms that can be used by people in wheelchairs. If a building with four or more units has no elevator and will be ready for first occupancy after March 13, 1991, these standards apply to ground floor units. These requirements for new buildings do not replace any more stringent standards in state or local law. Housing opportunities for families. Unless a building or community qualifies as housing for older persons, it may not discriminate based on familial status. That is, it may not discriminate against families in which one or more children under 18 live with. A parent. A person who has legal custody of the child or children or the designee of the parent or legal custodian with the parent or the custodian's written permission. Familial status protection also applies to pregnant women and anyone securing legal custody of a child under 18. Housing for older persons is exempt from the prohibition against familial status discrimination if HUD has determined that it is specifically designed for and occupied by elderly persons under a federal, state, or local government program or it is occupied solely by persons who are 62 or older. It houses at least one person who is 55 or older in at least 80% of the occupied units and adheres to a policy that demonstrates an intent to house persons who are 55 or older. Americans with Disabilities Act. The Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, is an expansive law that affects almost all public accommodations, including retail stores, real estate offices, concert venues, government buildings, professional offices, restaurants, bars, and hotels, to name a few. Both a tenant in a commercial space and the landlord are potentially liable for violations of the ADA. When readily achievable, the ADA requires the removal of architectural and communication barriers. Ramp installations, curb cuts and sidewalks, repositioned shelves and telephones, flashing alarm lights, marked elevator control buttons, wider doors, elimination of turnstiles, alternate paths for travel, and levered door handles for easy access are also required. Single-family homes, private clubs, historic buildings, and religious organizations are exempt from the ADA. Federal laws affecting real estate brokerage, Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, the Dodd-Frank Act, was signed into law in July 2010. The purpose of the law is to promote the financial stability of the United States by improving accountability and transparency in the financial system, to end too big to fail, to protect the American taxpayer by ending bailouts, to protect consumers from abusive financial services practices, and for other purposes. The Dodd-Frank Act made sweeping changes to the financial regulatory system in response to the financial crisis in 2008. The law is complex, in part requiring the creation of new agencies, the consolidation of existing agencies, and mandating financial regulatory agencies to adopt new rules pursuant to stated timelines to implement the various and far-reaching requirements of the law. While the Dodd-Frank Act targets financial regulatory reform, it impacts the real estate industry because mortgage lending is a significant part of most real estate transactions. In addition, certain provisions in the Dodd-Frank Act establish new requirements for appraiser independence. Much of the impact on the real estate industry is unknown at this time, as the rules required to be adopted under the law to flesh out its requirements have not yet been proposed. RESPA, compliance, and related matters. The Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, RESPA, was first passed in 1974. It applies to transactions with loans on residential property, 1 to 4 units. RESPA requires certain disclosures that spell out the costs associated with the transaction, outline lender servicing and escrow practices, and describe business relationships between settlement service providers. RESPA is intended to help consumers become better shoppers for settlement services and eliminate kickbacks and referral fees that unnecessarily increase the costs of certain settlement services. Informing and responding to clients. Duty to respond and disclose. Supervising brokers, perhaps more so than other license holders, have a duty to respond to parties in a transaction, to provide disclosure of important information to their principal, and to act honestly and fairly with third parties. A sponsoring broker must promptly respond to a sponsored sales agent, the principal, and other license holders involved in a transaction, TREC Rules Section 535.2J. Promptness will be judged on the nature of the request, the time of day, and the type of transaction. A supervising broker should be reasonably available to supervised sales agents to provide needed advice and counsel. Another obligation is to disclose relevant information to the principal, which includes the disclosure of two types of information. All known information that would affect the principal's decision on any offer, and all significant information relating to the transaction, TREC Rules Section 535.156A and C. However, if a principal directs in writing not to be submitted offers after it has entered a contract, then that information need not be submitted. This direction could be included in a listing agreement or a contemporaneous or later document. The disclosure can be made through the supervised sales agent. In dealings with third parties, not clients, all license holders must be honest and fair and not provide inaccurate information to those third parties. Section 535.156B and D. Being responsible for the supervised sales agent, the supervising broker should be available during all normal business hours of the organization to provide experienced, informed advice and counsel to assist the sales agents and the organization's clients. The supervising broker should monitor transactions handled by sales agents to ensure proper disclosure is being made. The scope of required disclosure is broad and possibly subject to dispute, particularly if a transaction goes poorly. So close supervision and counseling of sales agents are appropriate. Sales agents should be reminded about their obligation to be honest and fair to third parties, which is part of their responsibility as licensed professionals. Antitrust, unfair competition. The Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Antitrust Act are federal laws that have a significant impact on the real estate industry. The purpose of the acts is to prevent any combination in restraint of trade. For real estate professionals, the biggest impact of these laws is in the area of compensation. Compensation rates must always be a matter of negotiation between the broker and the client. Any hint of a standard or going rate for compensation in a given market area could be evidence of violation and restraint of trade. Any attempt to boycott a discount real estate broker is a violation. License holders who refuse to show or sell the listings of a discount broker are participating in an illegal boycott. Any attempt to limit a discount broker's access to the multiple listing service or to trade association membership is a violation. Attempts to limit competition by allocating markets or customers are also violations. For example, if two or more brokers divide a territory, each agreeing to stay out of the other's area, they have violated antitrust laws. Penalties for violation include fines and possible prison sentences. Violators are also subject to possible civil suits by persons who suffer damage from anti-competitive activities. Compensation rates and any other means by which brokers are compensated by sellers and buyers are always negotiable between the parties. Any attempt by a group of brokers or between a group of brokerage firms to set the compensation rates in their area would be considered illegal price fixing. The federal laws that have the greatest impact in this area are the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Clayton Act. The Sherman Antitrust Act is very specific concerning this violation. A state law that applies to unfair competition is the Texas Free Enterprise and Antitrust Act, which is enforced by the Texas Attorney General. Compensation is and always shall be negotiable between the broker and his or her client, and are not set by any board of realtors, ours, between competitors, or by TREC. The elements of an antitrust violation are an agreement between competitors, imposes a restraint, and restraint is unreasonable. The antitrust laws prohibit any attempt to fix prices, limit competition by assigning market areas, or the boycotting discount brokers. An illegal boycott is an agreement among two or more competitors not to do business with another competitor to induce the other competitor to change its business practices. An example of a group boycott in real estate brokerage is an agreement among brokerage firms not to show a certain brokerage firm's listings. Junk Fax Prevention Act. The Telephone Consumer Protection Act, TCPA, restricts the use of the facsimile machine to deliver unsolicited advertisements. Specifically, the TCPA prohibits the use of any telephone facsimile machine, computer, or other devices to send an unsolicited advertisement to a telephone facsimile machine. The Act only applies to those facsimile messages that constitute unsolicited advertisements. The statutory prohibition applies to such advertisements sent both to residential and business facsimile numbers. In 2005, the Junk Fax Prevention Act amended the TCPA to permit the sending of unsolicited facsimile advertisements to individuals and businesses with which the sender has an established business relationship, EBR, and to provide a process by which any sender must cease sending such advertisements upon the request of the recipient. On April 5, 2006, the Commission adopted rules to implement the Junk Fax Prevention Act. Among other things, the rule requires the sender of fax advertisements to provide notice and contact information on the fax that allows recipients to opt out of future fax transmissions from the sender, and requires senders to honor opt-out requests within the shortest reasonable period of time, not to exceed 30 days. Do not call policy, can spam, fax policy. Solicitations or advertisements communicated by phone, fax, or email are now governed by several federal and state statutes. Brokers, especially brokers who make cold calls or send out advertisements by fax or email, need to be aware of these statutes and may need to seek additional education. Do not call. Under its authority from the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, TCPA, the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, established, together with the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, the National Do Not Call Registry. The registry is nationwide in scope, applies to all telemarketers, except for certain nonprofit organizations, and covers both interstate and intrastate telemarketing calls. Commercial telemarketers are not allowed to call a consumer if their number is on the registry, subject to certain exceptions. As a result, consumers can, if they choose, reduce the number of unwanted phone calls to their homes. Telephone numbers placed on the National Do Not Call Registry will remain on it permanently. More than 157 million phone numbers are on the National Do Not Call Registry. Telephone numbers on the registry will only be removed when they are disconnected and reassigned, or when the consumer chooses to remove a number from the registry. License holders who make cold calls must comply with the requirements of the National Do Not Call rules. Specifically, before making a cold call, telemarketers must verify whether the number is on the National Do Not Call registry. License holders may not make cold calls to numbers in the registry. the brokerage needs to update any download of the registry at least every 31 days. A license holder may call a person whose number is on the Do Not Call registry if the broker has an established business relationship, EBR, with the person. An EBR exists with someone who was a party to a transaction with the brokerage firm in the last 18 months, or with someone who made an inquiry with the broker's firm within the last 3 months. Additionally, a license holder may call if a consumer grants prior written permission. The rules require that a brokerage firm that makes cold calls must maintain an internal Do Not Call list. Requests to be placed in the internal list must be honored indefinitely. The internal list applies to all license holders and employees in the company. The company should maintain a central list into which each caller may input names and check before making calls. If a name is on the internal list, the number may not be called, even if the number is not on the National Do Not Call Registry. The FTC fines telemarketers up to $50,120 for each call to a member of the Do Not Call list. Anti-spam. The CAN-SPAM Act of 2003 is a commonly used name for the Controlling the Assault of Non-Solicited Pornography and Marketing Act of 2003. The law took effect on January 1, 2004. When sending out emails with advertisements, license holders must comply with the federal CAN-SPAM statute governing email solicitations. The statute applies to any email that contains advertising. The statute prohibits the falsification of routing or sending information in any email, and any false, misleading, or deceptive statements in the subject line. The CAN-SPAM statute provides that the sender's message must contain a clear and conspicuous notice that the message is an advertisement or solicitation. It also requires the sender's message to include a valid physical postal address and requires that emails containing advertisements must contain unsubscribe features. The statute requires that it be honored in 10 days and also requires that the unsubscribe feature remain active for 30 days after the message is sent. Each separate email in violation of the CAN-SPAM Act is subject to penalties of up to $50,120. Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act. The Interstate Land Sales Full Disclosure Act was passed by Congress in 1968. The act was passed to protect consumers from fraud in the sale or lease of land. The act requires developers to register subdivisions of lots or condominium units sold in interstate commerce. Filings were previously administered by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. The act is currently administered by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB. Developers are required to provide each purchaser with a disclosure document, property report. The property report contains information about the subdivision. It is required to be delivered to a purchaser before the signing of a purchase agreement. The purchase agreement gives the purchaser a 7-day period in which the purchase can be canceled. The act was primarily designed to protect consumers from developers who sold properties in remote areas with promises of clubhouses, golf courses, and other facilities. Many of these properties were sold sight unseen. When the purchaser finally visited the property, the reality was often very different from the promises made in the promotional materials. In many cases, the developer filed for bankruptcy and never built or completed the promised amenities. Environmental protection legislation. The Comprehensive Environmental Response, Compensation, and Liability Act, CERCLA, was passed by Congress in 1980. CERCLA was designed to clean up sites contaminated with hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. CERCLA gives the authority to recover natural resource damages caused by releases of hazardous substances. Authority for cleanup under the Act is granted to federal natural resource agencies, states' natural resource agencies, Native American tribes. The primary responsibility for cleanup is given to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. The EPA may identify parties responsible for hazardous substances released into the environment and compel those parties to clean up the sites, or it may clean up itself and recover the costs from responsible parties. Responsible parties could include buyers, sellers, or any party who contributed to the pollution. potentially responsible parties. A potentially responsible party, PRP, is a possible polluter who may be held liable under CERCLA for the contamination of a property or resource. The potentially responsible parties include the current owner or operator of the site. The owner or operator of a site at the time that disposal of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant occurred. A person who arranged for the disposal of a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant at a site. A person who transported a hazardous substance, pollutant, or contaminant to a site, who also has selected that site for the disposal of the hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants. Note that a lender who forecloses a property or who becomes involved in the day-to-day financial management of a business that is in delinquency on a loan could possibly become a responsible party. CERCLA Safe Harbor. Safe Harbor rules stipulate the circumstances in which an individual or entity may be exempt from liability for the cleanup of a polluted site. Homeowners are generally exempt under the Act under the following conditions. They were unaware of the presence of pollutants when purchasing the property. They are not classified as a responsible party. They cooperate with the EPA or other agencies in the cleanup of the property. Safe Harbor rules applying to commercial transactions are considerably more complicated. Real estate professionals should be well-versed in the procedures for a purchaser to be granted safe harbor status in the purchase or lease of a property. Mold. Due to the prevalence of mold and the growing number of cases of dangerous levels of mold exposure, many states have begun to legislate mold standards. These standards provide guidelines for permissible levels of indoor mold and how to remediate mold if it is found in dangerous levels in a residence or building. Texas passed the Texas Mold Assessment and Remediation Rules, TMARR, on January 1, 2005, launching its Mold Mission Program. TMARR is administered by the Texas Department of State Health Services, DSHS, and sets rules and regulations for the inspection, assessment, and remediation of mold. TMARR requires that all persons who conduct assessment and remediation of mold be properly trained and licensed by the state. Under the rules, a person is not required to be licensed to perform mold remediation in an area in which the mold contamination affects a total surface area of less than 25 contiguous square feet. Also, an owner or the managing agent or employee of the owner is not required to be licensed to perform mold assessment or mold remediation on the owner's residential property as long as it has fewer than 10 residential dwelling units. This exemption applies regardless of the total surface area within the residential property that is affected by mold growth. An insurer may not use an underwriting guideline regarding a residential property insurance policy based upon previous mold damage or a prior mold damage claim filed either by the applicant or on the covered property if it is inspected by an independent mold assessor or adjuster who is licensed to perform mold assessment and provide to the property owner written certification on a Certificate of Mold Damage Remediation, MDR-1, that based on the mold assessment inspection, the property does not contain evidence of mold damage. Texas Department of Insurance Regulations regarding mold. Testing mold is not necessary to determine if it should be removed. If mold is visible, it should be removed. Removal is called remediation. Both mold assessors and mold remediators must be licensed. Testing after remediation is not required. Property owners can assess and remediate their own properties without a license. If you hire a mold remediator, he must give you a certificate of mold remediation no later than 10 days after work is complete. The certificate verifies that the mold has been removed and certifies, with reasonable certainty, that the underlying cause of the mold has been corrected. Receiving a certificate of mold remediation is an advantage for a homeowner because it prevents an insurer from making an underwriting decision on the property based on previous mold damage or claims. When selling a home, the law requires that the buyer be provided with copies of all certificates of mold remediation received within the past 5 years. Landlords who do not take measures to remediate mold from their properties once it has been reported by a tenant following the guidelines above may be liable for personal injuries, health problems resulting from mold exposure, and property damages.